be at the Democratic convention.
They have to be for the California caucus. If you missed that, it was wrong coming by.
Senator.
Senator, what has happened after 8 years of Democratic rule and 8 years of relative prosperity in the country and the great legislative advancement to sour the American public against their administration? Have you noticed any sweetening of the disposition?
Well, I think the problems face us in the country today didn't originate in the last 8 years. It originated in the roots of our society, and they are now emerging, as they have in all societies at a time when there's a great invisible gap between the affluent and the have-nots. It's been typical of all societies. When that happens, that visibility increases, as it does with television and radio, but the have-nots become more restless about what they consider to be their right and to a stake in this society. In the last 8 years, we've made possible the affluence, great economic growth in this country, and this, I think, is stimulating these underlying urges which spring from the roots of our past. We brought the Negroes here in chains 300 years ago. We never yet made them equal Americans. We fought a war on freedom. In 1876, we had an election which established pattern for race relationships up to our present time. I think we have a similar election this year. And I don't think black Americans will apply the results once more. They want an equal chance in our society. In addition to that, of course, we've neglected to develop a viable government for our great metropolitan areas. These areas are ungoverned. They contain 80% of our population, only two metropolitan areas in the country. Metropolitan area-wide governments. All the others are simply conglomerations of local units of government. In the case of Chicago, over 1,000 of them. In the case of New York, rising to 1,500 of them, with no coordination between them, no mobilization of their common resources to bring them to bear on the real problems of the people. Since all of these neglects from the past is now beginning to haunt us, and rightly so, because as you come closer to the ideal of achieving fulfillment for every member of society, to come closer, those who still don't have that state become more impatient to get it. That's understandable. And there are other aspects of affluence that I think generate discontent. The young, for example. College students of this generation were born since World War II. They never knew economic insecurity. They didn't know World War II. So all of the national experiences which have colored the attitudes of the rest of us who are older, they did not know. We were preoccupied from the 30s on with economic insecurity. We felt that once we established the economic health in this country and growth, that there'd be no problems. The affluence brings problems of its own. People, especially the young, are no longer happy with material things. They want greater challenges of the intellect and the spirit. They're not getting them in our materialistic society. They feel that the great institutions we've built, down the private sector and the public sector of our society, are impenetrable, impervious to the voices of those who are outside, and unresponsive to the new needs of America. These are perfectly understandable forces at work. I think our great challenge in this election and in the years ahead is to harness these forces, which are basically creators in their motivation, to a reformation of our institutions. Not a revolution, but a reformation. To meet modern times and, above all, to meet the original purpose of this system. Maximum participation by citizens in their own government.
Senator,
it requires some great organizational genius to do this.
And to what extent, sir, do you approve or disapprove of the strikes by teachers, the slowdown by police, and other such actions by public employees?
I think we've got to develop methods, collective bargaining methods, for government employees to exercise a more meaningful voice in the establishment of their rights, in the development of policies that bear upon their compensation, their role in government, their trust of our policies in the field of employee management, relations for some 30 years. We've really neglected this one. I think that we've got to develop some collective bargaining procedures which are meaningful for them.
Senator, last night George Wallace seemed to indicate that if equal time were made available for him at a later date, he'd be willing to step out of the three-way debate in favor of a debate between Nixon and Humphrey. I wonder what your reaction to that is, sir.
Well, I think that's what Mr. Humphrey would react to.
Senator, almost every day Governor Agnew is criticizing your views on dissent, protest. Day before yesterday, Mr. Nixon did. How do you differentiate your views of allowable protest in a democratic society with theirs?
Well, if I understood theirs clearly, I might be able to differentiate.
Well, Governor Agnew, for example, said he opposes any form of protest or dissent that involves breaking the law, including Montgomery boycott.
Well, I think very clearly in my speech yesterday at Seton Hall, I spelled out my opposition to violence as a form of protest.
Well, I'm not talking about violence. He said.
Well, I thought you just said that.
No, the bus boycott in Montgomery.
Well, I think that nonviolent protest may be one of the most, generally the only constitutional tool that could be used in some instances. Now, breaking the law is something for the protester to decide for himself. I'm against breaking the law as a matter of principle, but I can understand that the protester may feel that breaking the law, thus dramatizing his protest, and even taking the basis of his protest to the courts, is the only recourse available to him to resolve a question which is a matter of conscience to him. I understand that. I nevertheless don't condone the breaking of the law. Now, I made this clear. I made it clear on Issues and Answers on Sunday. Very clear. I read the transcript of my confrontation in the University of Southern California. And if Governor Agnew or Mr. Nixon listened to that program, Mr. Nixon never participates on them, but I assume once in a while he listens to one. But if he listened to it, he'd have gotten the truth. But he isn't interested, apparently. I made it clear that there's nothing in the record. There was nothing said at the University of Southern California to indicate that draft cards were being burned. The students didn't say they were burning draft cards. They held up pieces of paper and lighted them. Obviously, they were trying to create drama, but they didn't say they were draft cards. And Mr. Nixon and Mr. Agnew each stated, as a matter of fact, that draft cards were burned in my presence. Now, if they have evidence to prove that, they ought to give us the evidence. But they keep, so far as I know, this is a complete untruth. They keep stating the untruth and then attack me on the basis of that. That's the technique Mr. Nixon developed in California in his races for Congress and for the Senate. And now, as the polls in the East show that he's losing some of his lead, he's resorting to the old techniques. You know, I've been saying rather facetiously that if you've seen one Nixon, you've seen them all. And I guess that's pretty true. He's now resorting to that. And as the pressure grows, he's going to resort to it more and more. I've said, Ted, over and over again, the speeches which you've heard, that I object to violence as a form of protest, that I don't condone the breaking of the law, but I can understand that a citizen has the right to break the law. Obviously, look at the crime rates. They break the law every day. When they break it, they've got to expect the penalties. And I insist on that. Now, I think it seems to me that's just as clear can be.
Well, I'm sorry. It's not to me, Senator.
I'm sorry it isn't to you.
Do you, for example, think that someone could break a law in order to get it tested in court?
Well, it's done every day. It's done constantly.
It's
done by businessmen who disagree with the provision of the law and break it. And I said a few moments ago, I said it's understandable that a citizen might break the law to dramatize his protest to some provision in it, or he might break the law to test it in the courts. I said that a few moments ago.
You said it's understandable. You say it's an approvable form of action.
I said it's his prerogative. I mean, are you asking me to pass judgment on the motives of all the lawbreakers across this land? I've said that I believe in a government of laws. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
I've said that I don't condone breaking the law. Is that clear? I can understand one thing to understand and another thing to approve or disapprove. When a citizen breaks the law, to do one of two things. One, to demonstrate his, to dramatize his conscientious objection to it, and two, to test it in the courts. Perfectly understandable options for a citizen to take. But to twist that into approval or disapproval is simply not to listen to what I'm saying.
John, we have time for clear enough. Senator, one quick question.
Regarding the mechanics of the election, in Pennsylvania in particular, and northeastern Pennsylvania in particular, all the candidates in the past month have visited the area, and several have come back several times. But cities like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia in the state, they're coming to northeastern Pennsylvania. Is this a pivotal area as far as carrying the state is concerned?
Oh, you've got to ask Joe about that. I don't really know what's pivotal in that.
We've been all over Pennsylvania, up and down a million times.
Route this morning. Anacoke, Pennsylvania, October 24th, 1968.
Of the economic problems you've had here over the last 10 or 20 years, as your economy has shifted from a coal-based economy to a broader economy, you've had the problems of adjusting. Senator Kennedy understood this sort of thing in 1960 when he ran for the presidency of the United States. Against the very man we're running against in 1968. And for the life of me, I don't understand why, if Nixon wasn't good enough in 60, he isn't good enough in 1968. Senator Kennedy, President Kennedy, President Johnson, Vice President Humphrey, and I have always believed that government has a responsibility to help people deal with problems such as those that you faced in the last 10 or 20 years. Because you've had the courage to face them, because you've been willing to take risks, because you've been willing to work at the job of upgrading your economy, you've done that job. And you've had the help of an understanding government in Washington. When Mr. Nixon left office as vice president in 1960, his administration left 5 million unemployed Americans, an unemployment rate of 7%, a record of 3 recessions in 8 years. And that's had its impact here in the state of Pennsylvania. The unemployment rate in the Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Hazleton area, when Nixon left office last, was 12.5%. It's now been reduced to less than 3.5%. This wasn't accidental. This happened because Democratic presidents and Democratic Congresses have understood that the objective of government in our country is what Jefferson proclaimed it to be 180 years ago, to promote the happiness of its people. And when its people are in trouble, it's the responsibility of government to help. And so as a result, President Kennedy kept his promise, and since 1960, we've had a growing, expanding economy without a single setback. We've increased our national production by $400 billion, almost twice what it was in 1960. And that represents the unleashed economic potential of our people to serve their own needs, to create the jobs, to build the schools, to develop the potential of our young people. This is what America represents, an opportunity for all our people to develop their minds, their spirits, their skills, their talents, in order to put them to work on our resources, in order to work together to build a stronger, more prosperous, and freer country. And that's what we've been doing for the last 8 years. And Mr. Humphrey and I are campaigning from coast to coast, asking you to help us to continue this kind of effort in behalf of rank-and-file Americans of all kinds. It's in that way that we create opportunity. It's in that way that we make Americans satisfied with the system under which we're living. It's in that way that we build peace and order and justice for all our people. That's the answer we represent. We've got 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, to do this job. And I know you wouldn't have turned out here today unless you're willing to help us. We need your help, And let me tell you that the way things are going, with the kind of effort that I know you'll be willing to give us, we can win on November 5th. Not only for Humphrey and Muskie and the Democratic Party, but for the American people and for yourselves. So give us your help between now and November 5th, and we'll have a great victory on November 5th. I assume there are a few Polish faces in the crowd in front of me. And to all of you, as we face the years ahead and remember what this great country has done for us, may I say, Bóg zapłać moje drodzy. Good luck and God bless you all.
Shamokin, Pennsylvania, October 24th, 1968.
Shamokin, this afternoon. I wish you'd bring some of that warm Maine air down here to warm it up a little. But it hasn't been a cool day at all, because all along the road, people like you have turned out to make us feel welcome. I'm sure that it is partly a reflection of your natural hospitality as well as your partisan interest. But in any case, it's good to be with you. I've been especially interested today in traveling through this area because even from my place up in Maine, I've been aware over the past few years of the problems that you've had in this area in adjusting from a coal-based economy to something different which would provide the jobs and the opportunity that every American seeks. I've traveled now all over the country, and it's been very reassuring to me to find that in spite of our differences, in spite of the difficult problems we face, in spite of the unrest which prompts some Americans to distrust other Americans, we are still basically one country and one people, all looking for the same things out of life. Decent jobs, decent homes, an opportunity to raise our families, an opportunity to educate our young people. This is what we've been trying to do for the last 8 years. John Kennedy came down through this area in 1960 asking for your help in getting the country moving again.
Over there, George.
At that time, we had 8 years of a Republican administration in which Mr. Nixon was vice president. And during those eight years, we'd had three recessions, which cost us $175 billion in production. That loss in production made itself felt in the standard of living of every American. It made itself felt in our capacity as a country to provide the jobs which create the opportunity we all want. And when he left office as vice president, there were 5 million Americans unemployed. The unemployment rate was 7%. In this area, it was over 12.5% in that year of 1960. And John Kennedy promised that if we'd help him to achieve the office of the presidency, that he'd work to change all that. He kept that promise. President Johnson and Vice President Humphrey taking up his task when he was taken from us, kept that promise for him. And what's happened in this last 8 years? Our national production has grown until today. It's $400 billion a year greater than it was in 1960. That 5 million unemployed has been reduced to 2 million. The 12.5% unemployment rate in this area has been cut to less than 3%. Well, these are important figures to talk about. But more important is what they've meant to people. Thomas Jefferson said a long time ago that the purpose of government in our society is to make it possible for people to achieve happiness. This is what we've undertaken to do in the last 8 years. And as a result of our efforts, we've had 91 months of unbroken and uninterrupted economic growth, which has made itself felt in this area. And this has improved the life of most Americans. There are still a lot of Americans who feel they don't have a stake in our society, and they're fighting for it, and they're protesting about it. And so we must continue to strengthen this country so that there'll be opportunity for all. Because as Jefferson said, you have peace in any society, you have order in any society, only when every member of it has a stake in it, has hope for the future, for himself and for his children. And that's what we're working for. Most of the people in front of me here, like me, are descendants of immigrant stock. And our people came to this country looking for what we found here. We've justified their courage and their faith by what America has made possible here. And we have helped make it possible. That's the interesting thing about the story of this region, that unless you had been willing to go to work, make the effort, the sacrifice, to change things from what they were 8 years ago, it could not have been done, even though the government in Washington was willing to help. And so when you have that kind of a partnership between government and the people government should represent, you can achieve great things. And we have achieved great things in this country. We've achieved them in the last 8 years. As a result of what we've done, we've been able to double our annual investment in good schools for our children. We've been able to double our investment in health facilities for those who are unable to provide for themselves. And we've been able to double our investment each year in new factories, new industries, which create the jobs, improve conditions, the better income, which make life meaningful for our people. Well, we of immigrant stock understand the meaning of all this, because this is what we came here to fight for. This is what we came here to get. And this is what we came here and found. So we want to continue this kind of effort, for this kind of purpose, for this kind of goal in the years ahead, to build a greater America, a growing America of opportunity for every American. And when we achieve that, we'll have the kind of peace and harmony that we all want in our community. So I ask your help to do that job. I ask the kind of help you gave John Kennedy. If you give us that help on November 5th, we'll win a great victory for the American people. You know, these youngsters are here primarily because of the excitement. And that's understandable. I'm willing to get an audience for any reason. But I hope that in the process, they're also listening a little bit to what this is all about. Because this process of election campaign is so important if we're to build the right kind of country. There's a lot of unrest now among people who think they aren't adequately represented in this political process. Well, they are. But because of television and radio and all the new ways of communicating with people, we have less and less of this kind of a gathering. And I'm sorry that's so, although today we've had great crowds all along the way. But this is the best way for political leaders or would-be political leaders to talk to people. Because although you don't have a chance to make a speech here, I get some idea from your response about whether or not I'm on the right track, whether I've got the right message. And I say to you that the message of freedom, the message of opportunity, is so much better than the message of fear and hatred that this man Wallace sells. You know, I remember New England, I remember the New England of the 1920s, when those of us of immigrant stock were still regarded as foreigners by a lot of Americans of native stock. And the Klan came out of the South, this Klan which backed Wallace, and came up to New England to fight whom? To fight us foreigners. That's who they were fighting back in the 20s. Yes, the people who made it possible for you to be here, young man, they came up here to fight us. This man. message of fear and hatred, and we reject it. And the American people will reject it on November 5th so soundly that it will never arise again to haunt America. Because to those who came here to bring us, to make possible our lives here, they came here to escape fear. They came here to escape hatred. They came here to escape division. They came here to find opportunity for themselves, not to deny it to others. And we learned that here the hard way. And I'm old enough to remember how hard it was at the beginning to fight these people like them who wanted to throw us out, who wanted to throw us out of the mainstream of American life. Well, we made it in spite of the Wallaces of that time. And Americans today are going to make it in spite of the Wallaces of our time. We're going to continue to build a great America in a way that George Wallace completely misunderstands. The right way. The way that prompts Americans to work together, to cooperate together, and to build together. And that's what's made this great country here in the year 1968. Yes, and you young men who carry the Wallace banner, we're going to keep it that way after November 5th. Thank you.
Pottsville, Pennsylvania, October 24th, 1968.
Please, the rest of you listen to this. Let him speak his piece. Well, come on, I'm giving you a chance to show your courage. Be quiet. Are you through? Are you through? All right, now let me speak. Mayor Close and Mrs. Close, Jim Lipset, your congressional candidate, Gus Yatron. Congressman Rhodes. Other distinguished candidates and my good friends of Pottsville. It's been a wonderful day traveling here from Wilkes-Barre down through so many towns now, I forget how many. Back there in the 20s, you remember it. Some of you are old enough to remember it. And now to see some of the descendants of immigrants supporting that kind of message and that kind of leadership here in the year 1968 is to do violence to those who came to this country to make it possible for us to enjoy it. So let's contribute to America what our immigrant forebears contributed to it. Courage, the love of freedom and liberty, and the determination to work to make this such a great country that every American will have that kind of an opportunity which makes life decent and meaningful for any human being. A decent job, a decent home, a decent school for his kids. That's what every human being under God's heaven wants, and that's what America can provide if we'll work at it as we are.
Against conditions which they do not like. This has been in the nature of America from the beginning. It was in the nature of America when my father came to this country, when other immigrants came to this country. They didn't get instant equality. They didn't get instant success. They didn't instantly win what they wanted, a chance in life, a stake in life. but they had the chance to go after it. And they were helped and understood by Americans who had come before them and who had already made their way. And this has been the nature of America from the beginning. We set out, first of all, to make it our purpose to create hope for every member of our society. And then we began to work at the job of doing it. And in the process, we brought all kinds of people into our country. 40 million immigrants at the turn of the last century, in the beginning of this century. So many of whom couldn't speak the language here. I know what my father's answer was. He came here to escape fear. He came here to escape oppression. He came here to escape hatred. This thing is going to blow up. It was all right before. I'm very suspicious of this thing. Maybe that's a signal to stop. You know, you ought to have a little humor in a campaign as well as serious talk. And I saw something in the Wall Street Journal the other day that you might enjoy. This had to do with the makeup problems of the candidates. And I especially enjoyed that part of it that had to do with Mr. Nixon's makeup problems. You might like to hear about it. This is from the Wall Street Journal, so I assume that it's the conservative answer to his problems. Well, his makeup people say that Mr. Nixon's perspiration problem is the worst he's ever seen.
That's Nixon for you.
Now, here's what they've done about it. They've applied perspirants, antiperspirants, to the candidate's face before he goes on cameras, and they give him a handkerchief soaked in the chemicals so that he can mop his brow during TV appearances. Even so, he is still sweating a lot. And I think that the closer he gets to election, the more he's going to sweat. But then you ought to hear what his lighting expert has to say. You remember, that created problems for him in those debates with Jack Kennedy in 1960. Well, you young people wouldn't remember that, but it did. But he has a lighting expert now. And here's what his lighting expert says. He said, we can't make Nixon look like Ronald Reagan, but we can make him look as good as Nixon can. Well, now that's high praise. But my friends, let me say this in closing. We do have great problems in America in 1968. We have the problem of the war, which we must end as soon as we can in order to deal with our problems at home. We have the problem of the relationships between our people, and we must develop understanding and compassion and harmony and opportunity in the way that Americans have always proven that they can. But he's doing nothing to convince the American people, to convince the people of America that he has anything in mind for the future of our country that is worth their deep emotional commitment in this election year. He's trying to coast to victory, and in the process, he's giving his followers very little to coast on. So the way is open for us to do what needs to be done. We ought to win because we have an understanding as a party that what is involved here in this election campaign is the ability of the American people to live together in harmony, in a relationship of mutual trust with their leaders in government. This is what freedom and a free society means, that the people trust each other and their leaders, and that their leaders trust them. And never has that issue been so much at stake as it is in this election year, and Richard Nixon is contributing nothing to a resolution
of that issue. Or they tell us that there's a new Nixon, but as far as I'm concerned, when you've seen one Nixon, you've seen them all. He accomplished nothing as a member of Congress and doesn't even claim in his campaign literature this year to have accomplished anything as a congressman or as a senator. He accomplished nothing as vice president that his president could remember. And in this campaign, he hasn't said anything. And he's refused to debate his opponents. He doesn't want to be cross-examined on what he represents as a potential future president of the United States. Doesn't want to be examined by his opponents or by the press in national television interview-type programs. And he hasn't been on one of them since 1966. There was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal the other day about Richard Nixon's makeup problems. 1960, and it isn't good enough in 1968. So let's mobilize this great Democratic Party. It's there. It exists from coast to coast. And over the past 30 years, it has brought within it all of the people who are truly concerned about the lives of Americans, whoever they are, wherever they are, as human beings. And Jefferson told us years ago that this government exists to make possible the happiness of its people. That's still our objective in 1968. We exist as a society to make possible the happiness of every human being who lives on this continent within the boundaries of the United States of America. So on November 5th, let's make sure that the American people make the one decision that will contribute to that end. And I'll be with you until and after that day. Good night, and God bless you all.